training camp's over. You guys practiced this morning. There was live hitting, Andy. That's a good thing, is it not?
Stepping it up, Jeff. Stepping it up.
Gentleman who will call all of the Browns preseason games that can be televised locally joins us right now on the fan hotline. He's with us all the time. We love him. He's our buddy Chris Rose. Hello, Chris. How are you, sir?
Hi, Christopher.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We are well. Practice was fun. We didn't get to watch too much of it because we're off to the side and people were standing in front of us, but we're told that they actually practiced tackling today, Chris. How about that in the NFL?
Good. Needs to be done.
Why do teams, injury obviously a reason, but there's got to be a balance to it too, Chris. Do teams tackle enough in this day and age, or do they err on the side of caution too much?
Yeah, I mean, watch the first month of the NFL. The tackling's horrible. There's a ton of scoring in the early going. Obviously, the weather is pristine, so that helps as well. But the tackling is horrific. There's very few teams that tackle to the ground in training camp. And, I mean, I get it. I understand it. You want as many healthy bodies. We found that out yesterday as
yep.
possible in week one. But, you know, it's an occupational hazard, and you can't get better by not tackling. I've never understood it in recent years, and I guess I do understand. I can answer my own question that these guys are so afraid of being the coach who cost, you know, themselves a valuable player because they hit too much during training camp. I mean, there's only 16 padded practices. That's not that much. 16 in order to get ready for the season.
All right, my friend, are you ready to play the quarterback game?
Sure.
All right. Where are we on the quarterback game? What do you think? With Pickett getting hurt this week, how much does that change the scenario?
Well, I can't imagine with a hamstring that, you know, I listened to Kevin's press conference today, and they were asking him about, well, will he be back Friday? And like Friday, God, that sounds early for a hamstring. I think Joe will be our starter week one against the Bengals. I think that would be exciting. I mean, I just worked. I did a 4-hour shift on Monday in the studio for NFL Network, where we take you to all the teams around the league. And I worked with David Carr, who was at Browns practice on Saturday. And he was telling me how much he enjoyed watching Joe Flacco throw the football. You know, this is a guy who, this is what he did for a living, right?
Right.
And he just said it, the ball just comes out of his hand different than a lot of players that have played the position. And it's fun to watch him. And he actually thinks, he and I were discussing about where we think the Browns could finish. And he was much more optimistic about them than some other people, I would say. So I think he's one, and then we'll see how the other guys shake it out. I think Dylan Gabriel could play great in the preseason. I think I told you this when they drafted him, that I really believe that like he's made for the preseason in terms of his how much football he's played and how good he was during the spring process that caught a lot of coaches' eyes. So wouldn't surprise me, and I can't wait to see Shador get out there. I just can't. I cannot wait.
That's what I mentioned earlier, Chris. The game against Carolina coming up, man, let's see these two young guys, especially on the football field. And it won't answer questions, but it'll certainly give everybody food for thought when it comes to both of them. If one of them's really good, obviously becomes the man that everybody starts clamoring for. And if one of them doesn't look good, people need to make sure they don't bury him. It's just NFL game number one, and doesn't even, you know, I mean, it's their first exposure. So, but I can't wait to see it, and I'm with you. I think Dylan Gabriel could be terrific because of the amount of football that he's played in college at the high level that he played in.
Yeah, and in pretty good conferences. So,
yep.
You know, we're all excited. You know, and that was the other thing that David said. He said the ball really comes out of his hand well. He said he's got a nice live arm. He said he was a little, he said a few of the reps that he got in with the ones, you could tell with Njoku and with Jerry Jeudy that he was a little amped up and he missed some throws. But you could see kind of what his process was and that his arm is really live. So he said the more comfortable he gets being put in that situation. And obviously he's going to get more reps with ones over the next however long, you know, Kenny Pickett's out, that that stuff will start to settle it down a little bit. But he liked what he saw out of him.
Chris, when I think fans sometimes go the wrong way. I don't know, wrong way is not probably not the right way. Like, perception versus reality, let's put it that way, when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. And I keep finding myself going back to watching DTR play for this team in the preseason and how excited I was to watch him, and then the reality when he got that start against the Ravens early in the season, and you're like, whoa. Like, when you what expectations do you think realistically fans should have for rookie quarterbacks, especially ones that aren't drafted in the first round?
I've gone over the numbers with you. The number of guys that are drafted outside of the first round in terms of since 2016, so this is almost a decade worth of data, there are only three non-first-round quarterbacks who have, I'm going to throw air quotes around them, made it. And it's Dak Prescott, it's Jalen Hurts, and it's Brock Purdy. Three of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the league, one of whom just won a Super Bowl, another whom who got on the precipice of doing it, and the other who has had a really good career in Dak, but obviously hasn't reached the heights that he had hoped as a team. But that's it. There are no other guys since 2016 that have done it. So the odds are stacked against them. And then when you throw in the physical height issue with Dylan Gabriel, then the number gets even smaller, no pun intended. So it's just, you have to know that going in, that the odds of it working are not great. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Doesn't mean it can't be us. You just have to understand it. And if you have that as your kind of your backbone and your structure going in, then whatever happens can either be, oh my God, did we luck into it? Like, it finally happened for us. Like, a guy who was drafted on day two or day three of the draft is our savior. We can have our guy, like New England had for two decades, or like Seattle had for a decade with Russell Wilson, or like Philly's got right now with Jalen Hurts. Like, it happened to us. Just don't expect it. That's all.
Chris, what do you think the early careers of Kyler Murray and Bryce Young say about short quarterbacks in today's NFL?
Well, you have to look at their situations, too. I mean, Carolina, it's been a
Carolina's
horrible
rough.
Down
he
there.
Played he played better when he came back last
he
year.
He totally played, but he really did play better. So,
yep.
You know, let's reserve judgment. The thing is that he looks, he's small, man.
Yeah, he's
so small. He's just frail. Kyler's different because he has the ability to extend plays that Bryce doesn't. And they've been a little all over the place as a franchise. Do I think that Kyler could be a Super Bowl quarterback? No, I don't. I don't see it. Can he be a guy that wins a lot of games? I think he can be and pops into the playoffs occasionally. But it's not my first choice. Yeah. If I'm building the team. Just not.
All right, Chris, let's switch gears. The baseball, the trade deadline coming up tomorrow. So we haven't had your reaction. I just want to hear what you think of the whole situation with Emmanuel Clase and how that affects where the organization had to make decisions this week or will be making decisions this week.
All right. I will not bring up the fact that I told you in the offseason we should have traded him. I'm not going to bring that up, okay?
Don't bring that up.
Or the last week you wanted to trade him to the Cubs.
Right, right.
Okay,
I will not
sure.
bring up those two things. Okay? So let's move on.
Champions Post.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I don't have any other information on what's going on, and I imagine the team doesn't either at all with what has transpired here. I don't believe that this is an organizational failure. I think these are, and once again, this is just an investigation, so we don't know what has happened. People can look on the internet and look at first pitches of innings, and they can have their own judgments. At this point, it's an investigation. But for people to think that teams, whether it's managers, GMs, or other teammates, know what's always going on in people's private lives, y'all have never set foot in a clubhouse. I'm just going to say that.
Right.
So let's not act like this is it. Oh, they've lost control. These guys need to be fired. No, that is not the way it's gone down. I can just tell you that. So let's stop with that BS right now. The other side of it is that this has screwed the organization. Emmanuel Clase was the most tradable commodity that made sense to trade, in my opinion, out of anything we have in the organization, and could have gotten a huge return because there are minimum of five teams that would kill for him right now to have him around. The Dodgers, the Cubs, the Phillies. I know we wouldn't trade him to the Tigers, but they could use him. I know there's some other huge team that I'm forgetting as well off the top of my head. But there would have been a ton of competition for his services. And now, Chris, we don't have that. Now we don't have that. And now we're all focusing on trading Stephen Kwan. Why?
I was just going to ask you that. Can I ask you this? Why? Why is his name out there as much as it is?
Because we don't sign guys to second contracts unless they're generational players like Jose Ramirez. And even that came down to the last minute, and it had to be a concession from him, right? I mean, if he didn't say, yes, I'll take severely under market value to stay in Cleveland because I love it here, then he would have been a San Diego Padre the next day. I'm not one of those people that will sit here and tell people how to spend their money because it's not fair. I mean, if I owned a business, nobody can tell me how to spend money, but it's painful. And it sucks that we, as Guardians fans, as good as the organization has been over the last dozen years, because they have treated us to some memorable playoff runs, including one a year ago. But that is such a thin needle to thread to know that you're living on borrowed time with guys like Francisco Lindor and now Stephen Kwan. Pardon my French, but that is a you-know-what way to run your organization. You can't buy your kid a Stephen Kwan jersey because you're worried that with 2 years left of control that they're going to trade him? That's horrible. That is horrible. Because you're trying to find the next Stephen Kwan
who
doesn't become a free agent until 2031. I mean, that's the game you want to play? That's where we are with this? That is tough to stomach, and it is tough to sell to your fan base.
Do you think the Guardians are putting that out there, Chris, and that they're actually actively looking to trade him? Or is his name just being floated by media members like crazy because teams in a position to trade for a guy could use a guy with Steven skills?
Well, there's also a real lack of position players that are available this year. It's unless there's people that are available that we don't know are available. Like a couple of years ago, remember when Max Scherzer got traded to the Dodgers and Trey Turner came along with him? We were like, whoa, Trey Turner just got traded? So that one kind of surprised us. Kwan, people are trying to connect dots. Cleveland doesn't give second contracts out to good players. He'll only have 2 years of control left after this season. Teams are looking for a bat that can help them. There's few better guys that can control the strike zone than Stephen Kwan when he's at the plate. It's the connecting of the dots here. So I don't know.
Well, Chris, I thought you brought up a great point. Like, this franchise has been built to have players that are in Kwan's shoes right now. Control with arbitration over the next 2 years, and then you try to figure it out. That's why I think this one seems different. Like, if they let Kwan go, this isn't the way they've built things to be a winner, whether it's every other year or not, and how they've been consistent, is to have players like Kwan on this team. And I can't imagine, I wonder what they're asking then to let him go, because it kind of goes against everything they've been doing since John Hart's been here.
Guys, I love Stephen Kwan. I love watching him play baseball. I love him as a guy. I think he's got the perfect mentality of a major leaguer. He's got swag and confidence without being a jerk. He's a great baseball player on both sides of the ball. I just, guys, I would not get this one at all. And it would really piss me off. And I love this team. And I think we've done a lot of good things. I think in recent years, we've kind of been on the wrong side of trades, which has hurt a lot. We're going through something with a couple of pitchers that's unprecedented in the sport for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it's hard right now. And they are in if they trade Stephen Kwan, you can forget about it. Like the minute the Browns start playing games, which is next Friday night in Charlotte, I'll see you next spring training. And that is a real dangerous area for them to live in. I hope they don't. I really hope that 36 hours from now, Stephen Kwan is still a Cleveland Guardian, because that'll be a real kick in the onions.
I agree with you on that one completely, because I keep looking at those 2 years of team control, and I think, well, why? You know, why now? I don't get it.
Because I'll tell you why. Because they're desperate. They're desperate to give themselves more of a margin of error of failure. And they say, well, if we just traded for some guy who's got 5 years of control left, and we think he can turn into Stephen Kwan, instead of, we've already got Stephen Kwan, let's try and figure out a way so that he isn't our second best player. Maybe he's our fourth best player in the lineup. That's been the problem with this team, is that we haven't developed. We've got two everyday major leaguers in our lineup. The rest of the guys are okay and can get on hot streaks, but they shouldn't be getting 400 and 500 at bats in a year. Like Manzardo, I think, is on the precipice of it. I really do. I think he should be playing against lefties every day too. Don't get me started on that.
But thank you.
Yeah, we're limited, and so now we're kind of shooting shots at a wall and hoping it sticks. Not a great way to build your team.
Is Bieber here tomorrow night?
Really good.
You think Bieber's here tomorrow night?
That one's hard, because I don't know if I'm an opposing GM, if I can pull the trigger on a guy I haven't seen throw a major league pitch since last April. That's a tough one. But if it's strictly a let's save money over the last 2 months move by the Guardians, then yeah. If they don't care what they get back, because I don't think they can get much back for him.
I would agree with you on that one. Always a pleasure. We look forward. You're doing Friday's game, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there with Joe Thomas and Aditi Kinkabwala. We'll have all three of them. Cannot wait.
Ready to roll. I can't wait to hear you. Thanks, buddy.